Conflicting tactical needs must be resolved through the rigorous application of the theoretical. The theoretical is the method by which the relative value of the competing priorities can be determined. This determination is critical. To choose the wrong tactical need is to hand weapons to the enemy. The error can easily compound to the point that this single choice can lead to defeat regardless of the foe's tactics. Indeed, the opponent may not have any strategy at all. War is a force unto itself, and though it is shaped by the decisions, correct or disastrous, of the combatants, it is not controlled by either faction. At best, its force can be directed, and the power to do so is useless if it is not applied correctly. Thus, not only is the theoretical the necessary precondition to victory, so is its absolute rigor. The decision made in the conscious absence of the theoretical is the guarantor of self-inflicted doom. Guilliman, On the Practical Necessity of Theoretical, 22, 5, 55. Chapter 5. Infestation, Preservation, Apostasy. The mural made Guilliman pause. This was before the word came from the 22nd. This was in the final seconds during which the war on Thoas followed the narrative he had established. In the pain of the years ahead, he did not often think back to this moment. It would be superseded by far worse memories, and far worse agony, far worse narratives. But even in that period of cursed innocence between Thoas and Calf, when so much of what he believed was burning and he did not know it, he did not like to think of this moment. He willed his mind to slide over the memory when he considered Thoas. There was much he would choose to put aside about the world. He would tell himself the memories and the thoughts they engendered were unprofitable, that they were irrelevant or worse. Their suppression was an active good. These were the things he would tell himself. And later, when the galaxy burned, and he was confronted by his blindness, there would be the fresh pain to come from this campaign. He would be reminded of all that he had not seen, and of all that he had chosen not to see. He would see the patterns and the repetitions in his blindness, and the terrible alloy of grief and rage would be forged anew. Guilliman and the companies he had selected to accompany him were deep into the ruins. They were making their way northwards. The route was circuitous, angling through multiple blocked intersections. They were taking the largest tunnels, wide enough for the full deployment of heavy armor. The passages could have been grand avenues. Stretches hundreds of yards long were open to the sky, where the high roofs had fallen in. There, as in the pyramid, Guilliman saw murals faded to vague blurs of color. Here, though, now, in the last moments of the narrative he had decreed, he and his sons were in an untouched section of the tunnels. The passage led across a colossal domed chamber. A mustering zone, Guilliman surmised. The orcs had pillaged it of metal, too, though there were more traces of the higher platforms. Their size suggested they had been landing pads. The floor was thick with debris, and the stench was eye-watering. Orcs had made a home of this chamber. A century of defacement covered the lower walls. Higher up, the original murals were intact. They were dark from the decades of smoke from dirty fires, but the wind did not reach this far in. The artwork had weathered time better than in any of the other regions the Ultramarines had crossed. The lights of the vehicles shone on the mural. Guilliman paused at the sight, Gage at his side. The companies waited for him. The vehicle engines idled, their guttural rumbles filling the dimness of the dome with echoes. Guilliman looked up, studying the mural. It was martial in theme. That was no surprise. Commanders 100 feet tall struck heroic poses. Their forces were faded hints behind them.
"Those shapes look familiar," Gage said, pointing to rough silhouettes.
"Land raiders," Guilliman said. "Then they had standard template constructs."
His gaze returned to the commanders. They held his attention. They made him uneasy. "Why?" he wondered.
"Analyze the details."
Piece by piece, there was nothing he could point to and state was objectively wrong. The cut of the uniforms, the shape of the caps, the stern visages, each detail spoke to the authority of these men and women and celebrated their prowess. Perhaps the answer was in the obscured portions of the mural, in the murky colours that had lost all form, but still gestured towards meaning.
"These soldiers are lacking," Gage said.
"Agreed," said Gilliman, and he came closer to finding what displeased him. "I have no sense that they are fighting in the name of anything."
"They do seem to be against the name of something."
"Yes, and only that."
The moment of contemplation was a long one, though it lasted mere seconds. And when Gilliman's dislike of the murals crystallized, the Vox burst into life. The Orc counterattack had begun. They were everywhere along the length of the ruins, and the 22nd chapter was taking the worst blows. The wave of greenskins appeared at the edge of the tank's illumination. They rounded the curve of the tunnel and charged towards the ground floor access to the pyramid. They howled with victorious rage. At the huge doorway, Iasus stood between land raiders. He waited a few seconds more for the orcs to be scores deep. They filled the width of the tunnel completely. If any of the smaller greenskins wound up on the sides, they were crushed against the tunnel walls by the bulk and momentum of their larger cousins.
"This is not a choke point," Iasus thought. "The tunnel is far too wide. We might as well be fighting in the plain again."
"Fire at will," he said.
Lasbeams seared the enemy column. They incinerated multiple orcs at a stroke. Heads and torsos became ash. Heavy bolters chewed up the forward ranks. The leading mass of orcs vanished in an explosion of blood and torn flesh. A few blasts punched all the way to the far wall. Rock vibrated. The tunnel hummed, then shook. In the lights of the tanks, the air turned grey with a snowfall of dust and rock chips. Cracks ran down its length. The tremors increased with every second of artillery fire.
"All companies,"
Iasus voxed,
"cease heavy fire. Infantry only. The structural integrity of the ruins is compromised."
The pyramid's solidity was an illusion, he realized. Whatever had damaged the other structures and punched craters through the tunnel roofs had punished this portion of the ruins too. It was a monument waiting to collapse. The land raiders of the 221st fell silent. The orcs raged forwards over the annihilated bodies of their kin. The tremors continued. Iasus could feel the pounding rhythm of ongoing shelling from one of the upper levels. It resonated through ceilings and walls, even into the rock under his boots.
"Cease fire! Cease fire!"
he shouted into the vox. The rhythm ceased. The tremors eased. But the dust still fell, in the tunnel and in the pyramid's chamber. The orcs were two-thirds of the way down the tunnel. Large bore but crude bullets shrieked into the ultramarine's line. Thousands of brutal axes and sword blades were raised, the bloodlust a tangible musk.
"Brothers of the 221st,
Iasus shouted. He raised his power sword. The dust created a bright nimbus around its blue light.
"Forwards with me! Courage and honor!"
They were his brothers. Many of them might not think so. Perhaps none of them did. But he was their chapter master, and when he called, they answered. A battering ram of blue and gold ceramite charged out of the pyramid to meet the orcs. The barrage of bolter shells was orders of magnitude beyond the power of the swarm of orc bullets. They inflicted almost as much damage as the land raider guns. Scores of greenskins died. For a moment, the orc wave seemed to stop where it was, the brutes dying as quickly as they ran forwards. The illusion was short-lived. The wave was too huge, too ferocious. It closed with the ultramarines, its thousands of voices united in a single shattering roar. In the final seconds before impact, the leading edge of the ultramarines' phalanx narrowed to a point. On either side, the ranks further back poured on the bolter fire. The spear point drove into the orcs with power sword and chain blade. The momentum of the two forces was such that Iasus had a sense of accelerating as he cut and shot his way into the green tide. Orcs thundered past, ignoring him in favor of the legionaries ahead of them. He butchered the orcs before him, his movements an efficient, murderous refrain. In these initial seconds, they came at him and he at them, too fast for them to defend against his blows. He swung his power sword through a neck, decapitating the greenskin with a single swipe. The head flew off to the left. The stump geysered blood. Iasus fired his bolt pistol through the crimson, drilling massive holes through the skull of the next orc before the body of the first had fallen. He brought his sword back the other way and into the neck of a third orc as the other bodies crumpled. Three enemies dead in two steps.
He ran on, a lightning scythe, slashing and shooting, moving deeper and deeper into the enemy lines. Behind him, the legionaries of the 221st took down the greenskins, each brother striking with his preferred weapons and techniques, the individual approaches forming a unified killing machine. For as long as half a minute, the Ultramarines' advance stopped the wave cold, a wedge driving deep into its core. Half a minute, when the attack to defend the pyramid seemed on the verge of becoming a true advance. That illusion lasted much longer than the first one. Then it died too. The orcs kept coming. The river of brute strength was unending. Giants waded through their smaller kin. One reached for Iasus. He pumped three shells into its chest. He destroyed its armor fashioned from scavenged metal plates. Fist-sized wounds opened in its torso. The orc snarled in agony, but didn't slow. The impact of the shells was enough to spoil the aim of its own blow, and it hit Iasus with the side of its axe blade, hard enough to snap the weapon in half. Iasus heard cracks on the left side of his armor as he flew against the rampaging orcs on his right. He crashed to the ground. He was trampled. Bodies fell on him, holding him in place. He roared and fired upwards, pulling the trigger so quickly that the explosions of the shells blew apart the corpses and hurled his attackers back, bleeding and dying. He rose just as the giant orc reached him again. The warlord shouted in its barbaric tongue and grabbed his shoulders with both hands. It lifted him high, squeezing as if it would crush him to pulp. As it raised him, he plunged his power blade forwards. The orc gutted itself. It stopped for a second, staring at him in disbelief and anger, holding him with its arms outstretched. Then it let go, and he plunged back into the cauldron. There were more huge greenskins arriving, slower than the others, but much more dangerous. Harder to kill, too. And still, the orcs kept coming. Their fury and energy grew with every second of violence. The Ultramarines' advance slowed, then stopped. Now the orcs were coming faster than they could be killed. They blunted the wedge of the 221st. "Make a wall," Iasus voxed the company. "Let none pass." The wedge grew wider, stretching from wall to wall. The lines of the Ultramarines were deep. The orcs had nearly 1,000 legionaries to fight through if they wished to reclaim the pyramid. They mean to, Iasus thought. On the heels of that thought came another, even less welcome. The orcs were not fighting to take back the ruins. The greenskins engaged in war for its own sake. They would attack until they or the Ultramarines were no more. And wasn't that why the Legion had come to Thoas? To exterminate the orcs. The ruins had changed that. Gilliman had ordered they be saved and held. So now Iasus fought to preserve as well as to destroy. Envy of the orcs flashed through his hearts. They fought without restriction and by instinct alone. They had a wild freedom in their way of war. He dismissed the envy in the same moment. He ran his sword through the eye of another brute, and in doing so he hurled the unworthy emotion away. There was no value in the orc way of being. There was no purpose. There was no meaning. But there was power and relentless strength in their hunger and the green-skinned multitude. The 22nd truly was fighting a tide. With every kill, Iasus was trying to swim against a savage current, and no matter how many orcs he shot and slashed, his blade and pistol could no more stop the relentless flow than they could kill the sea. The orcs roared and charged and fought and died and fought and charged endlessly. The 22nd could not stop the greenskins from reaching the pyramid. The strong point would fall. We don't need to stop them. The thought was a revelation, and it was liberation. He almost laughed as he sidestepped the axe swings of two orcs, took a step back, and drilled them with bolt shells. Theoretical. Preservation of the ruins is contingent on the completion of the initial goal of extermination. Practical. Do not fight to hold ground. Fight to destroy. What he had envied was the Ultramarines to take. There was no need for a strong point. The ruins would be theirs when the last orc lay dead. Our fight is not defensive, he voxed the chapter. Seek the opportunities of the moment. Annihilation is our watchword. Let them come and fall on your blades. Brothers, there are no reserves. We are all on the front lines. The shift in tactics was a nuance, but its importance was more than psychological. The only thing to defend would be a brother's flank and back. The Ultramarines formed into tighter, smaller, more mobile formations, unbreakable stones in the midst of the orc torrent. The battle roar that greeted his orders gave him new energy and hope. He hurled himself at the Xenos, slashing and shooting. In the heaving tide of the horde, it was difficult to gauge direction. No matter, every direction was forwards. The ground he covered was irrelevant. A step back was not a retreat. What mattered was each orc that fell. Every kill was the true way forwards. A few yards to his right, he saw two legionaries go down. The muzzles of their bolters glowed red from the rate of fire. The orcs came at them so fast that their disintegrating corpses hit them with the heavy weight of dead meat. There were multiple blows, and for a moment the bodies were shields for the greenskins behind. Orcs slammed into the legionaries and overwhelmed them with numbers. Isis tried to cut through the foe to reach them. It was too late. The bolters kept shooting for a few moments more, but cleavers and axes struck arms and legs and heads and torsos at once. Shrieking chain blades ground through the seams of armor. Isis was only two steps away from the mob that had obscured the legionaries when the floor was awash with a new flow of blood. It was not the stinking, obscene blood of orcs. It was heroic blood. Isis severed the spine of one of the attackers. He sprayed bolt shells in an arc before him. He brought retribution. The orcs died, but the horde did not care. Theoretical. Each of our losses is a true step back. There was no countering practical. His strategy was sound, but in the end it would hinge on numbers. Each ultramarine was irreplaceable. Every orc that died gave way to 20 more. The shift in tactics had bought time. He had hoped it would be enough to stem the tide at last. It was not. Courage and honor! Iasis shouted again. The words were the truth he lived as he fought. They were the ultimate worth of victory. He did not know if they would be enough. Gilliman led a forced march through the tunnels, heading north at speed, cursing every cave-in and detour that slowed the advance. The reports from the other chapters were coming in fast. They flowed through Habron, who updated Gilliman as the situation changed, and it was changing too quickly. "All pyramids are currently under attack on two fronts," Habron said, "by siege and infiltration." "The scale of the interior battles are something more than infiltration," Gilliman corrected. "Acknowledged, Primarch. The..." Habron paused. Gilliman heard him mutter quietly and dispassionately to himself as more data poured in. "The primary enemy forces are indeed inside the ruins," Habron continued. "What is the state of the external attacks?" "In all but one case, those orcs are being held outside the pyramids." "Good," Gilliman thought. If the orcs had linked up with each other, that would be a sign of the battle going badly for the Ultramarines contingent at that location, and the signal for things to grow much worse. "The orcs at our initial location are being contained outside. There have been no attacks from the inside as yet." More good news. Gilliman had left a much smaller force to hold that pyramid than there was inside the others. "The pattern we noted from the start is remaining consistent. The orcs are in greater concentrations in the northern sectors of the ruins." "Questions that need answers," Gilliman said. "Why that pattern? And where are they coming from?" The streams of orcs down the mountainsides had greatly diminished in the final stages of the Ultramarines' drive through the plain. He had thought the supply exhausted. It was not like the orcs to hold a reserve. "The strength of the interior attacks is much greater than available data would have indicated." The avenues of attack also troubled Gilliman. The orcs had staged what amounted to surprise attacks. The warnings of their approach were too short, their numbers too great. He looked at both sides of the tunnel his phalanx was marching through. The passage was so wide, the walls were barely visible, shrouded in deep gloom. He eyed the smaller passages as the lights of the tanks flashed over them. Inside those side tunnels, he knew, were still smaller tunnels. The scouts from all chapters had reported finding them, the minor byways of the endlessly proliferating labyrinth of the ruins. Theoretical. Smaller shafts exist within these tunnels as well. The orcs had had over a century to learn all the routes through the labyrinth. The idea of the brutes having the strategic foresight to use unexpected hidden routes struck him as flawed, yet it was the best analysis he could make with the information he had. Practical. Anticipate attacks in this region even when they seem unlikely. The unanticipated was already underway everywhere else. He opened the command channel on the Vox once more. "Ultramarines, hear me. We are coming. You will be reinforced. Hold against the orcs, and we will destroy them together. I am advancing north. We will exterminate the enemy one step at a time. At every stage, our victories will free up more troops to assist. Our retaliations will grow more terrible. Legionaries of the 22nd, your battle is the most heroic. Hold fast. Your brothers from all chapters will soon be punishing the greenskins at your sides. Together we have already claimed this fortress. Together we will purge it.
He stopped talking. He sniffed. His lips pulled back in anger.
Contacts, Habron warned.
I know, Gilliman said. In his rage, his boots struck the floor with greater force as he marched. They sent chips of stone flying.
Marius, he voxed to Gage.
The chapter master Primus had returned to his position, midway down the column.
We do not stop. We do not slow. No matter what.
Understood.
They came then. The orcs burst from the dark. Along a third of the length of the phalanx, they roared out of the side passages. Howling tributaries flowed into the main tunnel, forming a wave on each side of the ultramarines.
The waves came in, surging in the face of bolter fire so intense that the muzzle flashes filled the tunnel with blinding, strobing, killing, silver day. They came from the front, too. The huge passage extended for hundreds of yards, curving gently to the west.
Gilliman heard the mob and smelled it before it came into sight. He ran faster. He was fury now. These thoughtless creatures were anathema to everything he held to be true about war. They were an offense against everything the conduct of battle should be. Now they had dared to disrupt the narrative he had brought to Thoas. They had done enough damage. He charged the orcs as if their refusal of any rational form of war were a personal affront.
Gilliman opened fire with the Arbitrator.
He and the Invictari struck first. Their charge was faster. It was more furious. It was more dangerous. The tunnel erupted. The orcs died and died and died. Still they came, their animal revel undaunted.
In the Strategium of the Kvaskor, Hyrax watched the tacticarium screens. He listened to the litany of reports coming from the bridge below the command pulpit. Servitors recited lists of shifting coordinates in their flat voices. The dead recitations suggested nothing of the meaning they carried, their news of shifting battles and growing losses. The Augur and Vox officers delivered their updates in clipped, precise tones. Hyrax read their tension in their posture, subtly changing from unbending to rigid. The news from the 22nd had him swinging between frustration and rage. In the Strategium, he filtered the Vox feed so he heard only the command channels of the chapter. Several times he was on the verge of speaking. He held back each time, waiting until his picture of the battle was clearer, keeping his voice out of the clutter of communications. He would speak when he was of use. The situation the rivers of data formed was grave. He could see how the Primarch was countering the orcs. Gilliman was sweeping north. The other chapters were holding their own. Reinforcements would surely tip the balance against the Greenskins. The strategy would create cascading reinforcements, the victory of each position providing the means to guarantee the triumph of the next, until the combined might of the Legion struck the largest concentration of orcs attacking the 22nd. Already the gunships were pounding the exterior positions of the orcs outside the northernmost pyramid.
Not enough, Hyrax muttered.
The orcs outside were a distraction. There were three levels of fighting in the pyramid. The chapter was divided, and the orcs were not. From the orders shouted by the chapter master and the captains, Hyrax tracked the rapid shifts in the conflict. The disposition of the forces was fluid.
Theoretical, the Primarch will not arrive in time. Practical, the destroyers can. I can end this.
Hyrax broke in on the combat channel. He would be heard by all the senior officers.
Chapter master, he said. Requesting authorization for the drop pod insertion of the second destroyers. We can be at your position within minutes. Our weapons...
Authorization denied, Iasis said.
He grunted, as if something had hit him. The other voices faded out momentarily as close bolt pistol fire drowned out the rest of the feed.
Our brothers need us, Hyrax said.
The channel was still open, the exchange still being heard by the other captains. Hyrax was on the edge of insubordination. The other captains said nothing. Bursts of explosions and chainblade growling marked their individual struggles. The sounds vanished. Iasis had changed the communication to a private one.
Our orders are to preserve the ruins, said the chapter master.
Yours are to await the command to deploy, not to initiate it. He cut off the vox.
Cirrus drove his chainsword into the chest of the warlord. The orc was not much taller than the others around it, but it was wider, a tank of flesh and bone. It carried hammers in each hand and swung them forwards to batter Cirrus's armor. The blows were tremendous, and the orc kept striking as the chainsword whined through muscle and ribcage. Blood spurted. For several seconds, Cirrus was blinded by a deluge of crimson. The hammers hit him again and again. Another orc attacked him from behind. He was drowning in red and green. The blood flowed off his helmet, and he shoved his chainsword all the way through the orc. Its arms fell limp. Its torso split with a tearing of muscle and fell backwards. Cirrus whipped the chainsword around and into the flank of the orc behind him. The smaller brute shrieked as the teeth of the blade chewed its flesh apart. Cirrus cut the orc down one-handed. He fired his bolt pistol to the right, three shots taking off the upper half of the skull of a greenskin, rushing at him with a sword as long as a man's arm. He was surrounded by bodies. They were hemming him in. The orcs kept coming, and his movements were more and more restricted. A green wall was trying to bury him alive. It was trying to bury the entire company. Cirrus had followed the strategy commanded by Iasis. He had led the charge against the orcs. He had known from the start it would not succeed. The orcs were simply too numerous. With the support of the heavy armor, the greenskins would have been hurled back. Progress in the extermination would have been made. With the tanks idle except for heavy bolter turrets, the orcs surged forwards, trampling over their dead. The charge of the 223rd Company was bogged down before the first junction. The great Xenos wave battered the Ultramarines. It overwhelmed individual brothers. It sapped all forward momentum. The horde flowed around the legionaries. No matter how many they killed, more still came. They rampaged through any gap in the lines. Every Ultramarine who fell opened the way to the orcs. The flood found the cracks in the dam, and the orcs forced the 223rd back and back. Cirrus shouted in frustration. He turned full circle, sawing through limbs and sending shells through skulls. There was no retreat, Iasis had voxed as he changed tactics. Every dead enemy was an advance. Perhaps that was true for the Chaptermaster. Maybe the orcs weren't pressing as hard two levels below. Up here, things were different. Up here, Cirrus killed with as much fury and speed as he ever had in his decades of service to the Legion, and still he was going backwards. Even if he was standing still, he was losing ground. The losses were mounting. Iasis kept urging all the companies of the chapter to keep on the offensive. We've lost the offensive, Cirrus thought. The 223rd was fighting for its survival. The density of the orc horde in the tunnel was like a moving wall. Even if all the orcs in that mass were dead, it would have pushed the Ultramarines back. Close formations, Cirrus urged. Shoulder to shoulder. We are each other's shields. The order was unnecessary. The company was already contracting. He spoke to be present in the ears of the legionaries who, like him, had become isolated in the flood, their nearest brothers having been brought down. There was no forwards. There was only the green tide, and perhaps the hope of retrenchment. Cirrus turned and killed, turned and fought. He cut an orc in half vertically. The body fell apart, and between it he saw a fractured squad forming, a small island in the midst of the storm. He lunged in that direction, sawing and shooting through bodies. Axes and cleavers chopped into his armor. Orcs shot him at point-blank range, injuring themselves with the ricochets. The bullet impacts began to take their toll. Damage runes flashed amber and red in his helm lenses. Servo motors whined. There was a drag in his left leg, a microsecond delay between his impulse to move it and the armor's response. He compensated. He fought harder. He blocked a chain axe, its motor spewing smoke. Sword and axe shrieked against each other. He shot at the orcs, hacking at his right flank. Another slammed a cleaver into his left. The chain axe leaned more heavily against his sword. He ignored the blows on his sides and brought his pistol forwards. He fired a burst into the orc and into its weapon. The greenskin dropped and the axe exploded, raining burning promethium over the combatants. Liquid flame sloughed off Cirrus's armor. It coated the faces of his nearest attackers. They struck wildly through their blindness, howling anger and pain. He dispatched them with furious contempt. He was that much closer to the squad. He snarled as he butchered his way forwards.
He saw other lone warriors, like him, fighting their way towards the group. At the back of his mind, he was aware that his combat technique had become less precise, more savage. He raged in frustration at the constriction of space that made the elegance of his combat skills useless. He raged at the enemy and at the currents of war that had turned to run in the orcs' favor. He raged, too, at his chapter master. Hyrax had requested deployment. He had seen the need. Iasus had shut his answer off from the captains. Why bother? Cirrus wondered. If you don't want us to hear what you have to say, then we can guess all too easily what you said. There was no longer any sense in the tactics that had governed the campaign until now. There could be no preservation of this region of the ruins. The true aim of the campaign, annihilation, must be the touchstone. This was obvious beyond any need for analysis. He burned with the need to strike back hard, to carve victory from the enemy's hide with all the force of his frustration and hatred. Massive force against massive force. He gave voice to his rage. "Land raiders," Cirrus said. "Heavy weapons reauthorized. Targets as before. Fire at will." The tanks had not changed position. The enemy was everywhere. Their hatch gunners were firing heavy bolters in a 360-degree arc. They had killed hundreds of orcs and prevented them from storming the roofs of the tanks. They were surrounded by heaps of sundered bodies and brass shells, yet they had managed to clear no space or to ease the pressure of the howling, slavering horde. They were at the entrance to the tunnel, forming a line Cirrus had intended as an obstacle, but which had been no more than rocks in a foaming river. Now they would be more. 6 pairs of twin-linked las cannons fired as one. The tunnel filled with molten light. Hundreds of orcs perished in a single moment. Radiant heat blasted back through the pyramid, so intense it blistered skin. The sound was beyond searing, a shriek molecular and gigantic. As the scream faded, the chatter of the heavy bolters became clear again. The guns were pounding the corridor wave once more, tearing apart more of the stunned greenskins as the las cannons powered up. The land raiders fired a second time. The air in the pyramid smelled of fire. The heat was cumulative. So much energy into so many bodies, the organic mass of the orcs making the vast space claustrophobically small. Weapons designed for the open battlefield incinerated the interior wall. The land raiders fired a third time. "Captain Cirrus," Iasus foxed. "What are you doing? Cease fire! Cease fire!" Cirrus silenced him. "I am winning this war," he thought. A fourth barrage. A fifth. The rock of the tunnels began to glow. The heat was turning lethal. On the other side of the tanks in the pyramid's chamber, Cirrus saw some of the smaller orcs stagger, their flesh smouldering. The pressure of the horde diminished. Cirrus joined up with the squad. Their coordinated fire annihilated the orcs before them, and for the first time in hours there was space to move and to turn the art of the Ultramarines' warfare against the greenskins. The orc losses grew. The las cannons fired and fired and fired. The shriek of energy and the skull-crushing boom of the blast wave became the call and response of a choir of perfect destruction. The song resonated to the beat of Cirrus's hearts. It seemed his anger had stepped beyond him, become a terrible entity, and was striking out at the world of the ruins. He could even hear the pounding of its fists and the cracking of the ruins' bones. The sound of those blows grew louder yet, and Cirrus realized what he heard was real. Something even greater than the star-born fury of the las cannons had come. The sound was huge, deep, terminal. Cirrus looked up. The glow of the rock in the tunnel had spread like veins over the stone of the pyramid. Flames and muzzle flares created more illumination. Cirrus saw the cracks rush up the walls to meet at the pyramid's apex. A hail of rock fragments began. Larger and larger pieces fell to the floor of the upper level. He saw the entire structure begin to twist like a tree in the wind. The stones beneath his feet shook. They began to move in different directions. The pyramid groaned. It wailed like a thing alive, a thing that had woken to the world only to breathe its last. The darkness of millions of tons hurled itself upon him.